Morning. Today's daf in Chulin's Kuf Lamed Tes. We are beginning now the new parak of the Masechta and the final parak of the Masechta. And just a short couple of days, we're going to be finishing the Masechta. It's been a long, run. It's been about 6 months since we started the Masechta. It's 142 blot. Obviously, represents a very long Masechta. And we covered a lot of mitzvahs over the course of this Masechta as well. We covered the mitzvah of Shechita and Kisu Adam and Osa Vespano and Gedanash and Zoro Lechayim and Reshit Hagez and Shiluach Haken. So we are really we are really satiated in terms of the number of mitzvahs, just the simple mitzvahs that are covered in this Masechta. The last mitzvah over here, very exciting mitzvah, one that is clearly more interesting and more intriguing, and that is the mitzvah of sending away the mother bird. You come across a nest, and the nest has got either eggs or chicks in it. So the Torah gives very clear instructions in Parshas Kisetze, Shalech Tishalech Tishalach Esaim. So what you should do is you should send away the mother bird, and then afterwards you should take the eggs. Perhaps the Torah's requirement to send away the mother bird is an act of compassion and sympathy, and the Torah wants us not to take the eggs in front of the mother bird. Similarly, by the mitzvah of Osa Vesbeno, meaning not allowed to shech the mother and its offspring on the same day. And it could very well be the same idea, but that's already time on mitzvahs. That's what I'm trying to inject reasons behind the mitzvah. And the Gemara in Brachos and the Gemara in Megillah as well caution us not to do that. Don't inject time on mitzvahs. Don't inject reasons behind the mitzvah. The Mishnayos over there describe that if somebody gets up there and davens for the amud, and he ad libs, he puts a couple extra petitions in his davening, and he says, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu, just like you instructed us to have compassion over the mother bird, so too you should have compassion over us as well. And it's as if we're in the davening, we're as if we're saying the reason why we're doing the mitzvah is because it teaches us compassion. So the Mishnah over there very clearly says, Meshatkanos, so that if that's your Shliach Tzibur, and if that's what he's adding to his davening, so then we silence him, we quiet him. Okay, so, and ostensibly, we shouldn't be looking for Tamei HaMitzvos. Either we should do find Tamei HaMitzvos, that's a wonderful question. That's not for now. But anyway, so this is the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKen. And what we're going to be doing over the course of this parak, short parak, it's not that long. We're going to be finishing it up on Thursday. Today is Monday. Okay, so 4 days. And of course, Thursday also represents the end of the Masechta as well. But Thursday, we'll finish it up. But over the course of the next half week, so we're going to learn together some of the most basic halachas as it relates to the mitzvah. There's still going to be a lot of open-ended questions, even after we go through the Gemara. The Gemara is just a starting point. It's just the stepping stones so that at least we can have a conversation about the mitzvah itself. The Mishnah starts off, Shiluach HaKein. In terms of pronunciation, so you'll forgive me if I'm a little bit inconsistent, right? Kansipur, right? It's when in the Torah, so it's got a patach underneath. Shiluach HaKein, so traditionally it's pronounced with a tsere or a segel. Anyway, the depends on whether it's the conclusion of a word, the beginning of a word, grammar that I, quite frankly, don't know enough of. But anyway, Shiluach HaKein Noeg Baretz V'Chutz Haaretz. When it comes to the mitzvah, Shiluach HaKein sending away the mother bird, so it applies both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael, Bifnei Abayis, Shalom Bifnei Abayis. And it is irrespective of whether we do have or do not have a base of Mikdash. B'chul navolo b'mikdash. And it only applies to non-consecrated animals. It does not apply to consecrated animals. Chomer b'kisu adam mishluach haken. So now we're going to do our comparative shopping. This is a traditional topic of the Mishnah. Mishnah likes to compare various mitzvahs that are similar to one another, but yet one has a chomer over that of the other. So Kisu Adam is going to be more stringent than that of Shiluach HaKein. Shebe Kisu Adam noeg b'chayev alfa b'mezumim v'shein b'mezumim. Because when it comes to the mitzvah of Kisu Adam, now remember, the mitzvah of Kisu Adam is covering the blood of a chaya. You shecht either a chaya or an oaf. So there is a requirement to cover the blood of that animal that was shechted. So this mitzvah applies to chayev oaf. So it applies to both animals, wild animals, and birds. B'mezumim v'shein b'mezumim. And it does not matter whether it was prepared or whether you just happen to come across it. However, Shiluach HaKein ain't noeg ela ba'of. So as far as the mitzvah, Shiluach HaKein only applies to birds. Ve'ein noeg ela b'shein mezuman. And it only comes when it's unprepared. Meaning this is one of those mitzvahs where you can't plan for this mitzvah. This is a mitzvah of occurrence, and it is not a mitzvah where you can seek out and plan. We're going to be discussing that a little bit later on this morning. Ezu shein mezuman kagon, yivzim v'tane golem. Shekinu b'pardes. The Mishnah itself gives an example of what does that mean, where it's Einam Mezuman. Examples of that would be geese and chickens. Shekinenu bepardes, where they just simply happen to have a nest in your orchard. Aval im kinenu bebayis. However, let's say they have a nest in your house, right? You have a bird cage. I understand. I'm modernizing a little bit, but in other words, you have birds in your house. Vechen yone hardesios. Or you have, we'll see exactly what the correct wording of the Mishnah is, right? Hardes or hedgerows, but whatever. Well, in other words, birds in your house. Pater mishluach, so there's no requirement of shluach ha-kain, because these are domesticated birds, and the birds that require this mitzvah, shluach ha-kain, is only when they are discovered. And they're discovered outside of your home. Of tame patim l'shluach, of tame rovitz al-beitzei of tahor, v'tahor rovitz al-beitzei of tame, patim l'shaleach. So the Mishnah says that if there's anything not kosher, I mean this literally, if there's anything not kosher about either the bird or the chicks that it's on, so then there's no longer a mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein. Shiloh HaKein is only when the mother bird and its either eggs or chicks that it's nesting over are both kosher type. If either, says the Mishnah, the bird itself is not kosher, even though the eggs are kosher, and so yeah, the Mishnah is describing a scenario in which a mother bird is nesting on some other eggs. Okay. Does it happen? So for that, you'll have to speak to the ornithologist. But the Mishnah says, but there's no mitzvah of shiloh ha-kein. Of tamei rovitz ha-beitzei of tahor, v'tar rovitz ha-beitzei of etamei partam l'shach. Sorry, I read that already. Kara zachar, Rabbi Elazar mechai v'chacham im pochim. What if the mother bird is not a mother, but rather a father? In other words, it happens to be that the father decidedly is going to be sitting on top of the eggs, providing the warmth of the eggs. Is there going to be a mitzvah of shiloh ha-kein? So machlokis in the Mishnah between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, and as you could probably guess, that's going to be discussed in detail when we get to the Gemara. It's not coming up in today's daf. Let's start with the Gemara. Rabbi Avin v'Rabbi Meisha Charamar. So we have the statements of Amoraim, and one of them says as follows. Now, you'll notice, as we've now are wrapping up this Masechta, that many of the Prakim open up with the words, Bein Ba'aretz, Bein B'chutz Aretz, right? Bein B'fnei Abayis, Bein Shelo B'fnei Abayis, etc., etc. So we're going to be focusing on Ba'aretz V'chutz Aretz, where the Mishnah's headline is that this mitzvah applies both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. And if you would like a short list of what the Mishnah is making reference to, so you can take a look at Rashi right here. Rashi, the first Rashi in the Gemara, Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Meisha, Mefarshi Achmasisin. Which Mishnayos are we describing? Rashi gives a list of six different Mishnayos that open up various prakim. Kisu Hadam, sixth parak. Osef Espino, fifth parak. Gidon Asher, seventh parak. Ezra Velechayim, tenth parak. Reishis Ageiz, 11th parak. Shiluach HaKein, 12th parak. Don't ask me to do that when we're not learning Chulin. While we're learning Chulin, so I can tell you which each one of the Parakim are. But like a month from now, I'd like to think I could do that, but probably not. Anyway, so six Parakim here in this Masechta are detailing, are headlining with the words Bein Ba'aretz, Bein B'chutz Aretz. Now, how many times did the Mishnah actually need to teach us this? So the Gemara says, really, once. Meaning all the other times it's just format. Meaning we have a template of the Mishnah. And so for the template of the Mishnah, so the Mishnah just basically records, you know, this kind of template. But truth of the matter is that only for one time is it necessary. And then you ask the question, well, if it's only necessary one time, so why only have it one time? And why go ahead and repeat it five additional times, which as we're learning right now, based on our Gemara, is superfluous. So again, and just to compound the question, you know, the Gemara tells us numerous occasions that try to keep the Mishnayos as abbreviated as possible and don't add extra words to the Mishnah. And now we're learning together that there's a template and we're going to follow the template even though five out of six times it's not necessary. So but I suppose the answer is, no, I didn't see the answer inside formally, but it's my best guess. I suppose the answer is that, once again, we're talking about Mishnahs that are committed to memory, and there's a certain sing-song nature to the Mishnah. So once you have the Mishnahs committed down to memory, and you have the same template and same pattern, so it makes it easier to commit to memory. That's my best guess. So the number of v'chutzar shalot tzarech labar mereshis, I guess. La'afukim in the rabbi lai, da mereshis ha-geiz eino noag elabaretz. And the only time where there is a actual need for the mitzvahs apply both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael for the mitzvah of Reishis, I guess. And by the way, I mean, just to make the point obvious, but it's an obvious point, but I didn't say it yet. Why is it unnecessary? because these are not agricultural mitzvahs. None of these are agricultural mitzvahs. These are all mitzvahs that apply to an animal. Animals are not land, and so therefore there's no reason why we would demarcate between in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. However, for the mitzvah of Reishis Hagez, the shearing of the sheep, where according to Rabbi Eli, as we discussed in the previous perek, it only applies in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. So for that, the Mishnah has to tell us, that it only applies in and out of Eretz Yisrael, to exclude from the position of Rabbi Eli. So Da'amar Reishis Hagez and Anog Bel Aretz, okay, fine. So that is statement number one of one of these Amarayim. The Chan Amar, another statement, Kol Hecha Did Nam Bifnei Abayish, Shalom Bifnei Abayish, Shalom Letzarech. Now, once again, a template of a Mishnah. The Mishnah says that it applies when there is a Beis HaMikdash and when there's no Beis HaMikdash. And the truth of the matter is that most of the time it's not necessary. Meaning it's a template, and the Mishnayos have it. But the Mishnah didn't have to say. We wouldn't have thought otherwise. Levarmi Osev Espeno, with exception to Osev Espeno. Because Sakadach, I mean, a whole V'inyan de Kashim Ksiv, Bizmandi Kashim Ninhog, Bizmandalek Kashim Lo Sinog, Lo Ninhog, Kamash Malan. And so the Havamina would have been like this. By the mitzvah of Osev Espeno, it would apply only when there's a base of Mikdash. Why? Osev Espeno is applying to Chulin. It doesn't apply to Karbanos. That's true. But where can I find Osev Espeno in the Torah? Contextually, I find it amongst the other halachas of Karbanos, right? The Torah says that the Torah places the mitzvah of Osev Espeno by the halachas of Karbanos, of Kachim. And so therefore, I might have thought that there's some sort of linkage between the mitzvah of Osev Espeno and Karbanos. And therefore, the mitzvah of Osev Espeno only applies when there's a Beis HaMikdash. That's the Havamina. And that's the only time that the Mishnah really needs to tell us this, because again, these are mitzvahs that all apply to Chulin. Did you notice that all these perekim are found in the Masechta called Chulin? So all these apply to Chulin. So most of the time, of course it applies when there's no Beis HaMikdash. We're not talking about Karbanos. Okay, with exception to Osev Espeno. Vitarvayu Amrei. Now, that was a statement that was attributed to one of the Amorayim. The Gemara just simply didn't tell us who said which one, but Vitarvayu Amrei, the two Amorayim said as follows. Kol Hecha Did Nam B'Chulin V'Mukdashin L'Tzorech. Now, when the Mishnah says Bechulin uve mukdashim, so that actually is necessary. Levar mi gitanasha, with exception to gitanasha, where the Isser of gitanasha, when the Mishnah says it applies to both chulin and mukdashim, even though the Mishnah makes that point clearly, it's not necessary. It's superfluous. Why? Pshita, meaning it's an obvious point. Mishum deikdash pakalei Isser gitanasha minei. Let me ask you a simple question. Says the Gemara, you're a makdash the animal. That's wonderful. It already had the Isser of gitanasha. And now that you are makdish the animal, the issur of Gid and Usha just kind of goes away and disappears? Obviously not. So therefore, the Mishnah didn't have to say that Gid and Usha applies to a carbon. Of course it applies to a carbon. Now the Gemara says, then wait 1 second. V'lavu kibna bevladas kachim. So the Gemara says, now if you go back to Perek Gid and Usha and you remember, one of the first discussions that was had in the seventh Perek is that perhaps the Mishnah's point is that when the Mishnah says that it applies to Kachim, it applies to Vlados Kachim. Meaning, if you remember that sugya over there in the beginning of the seventh parak of Chulin, so the Gemara was bothered exactly by our question. Why would the Mishnah have to say that it applies to both Chulin and Mukdashim? If just because you're a Makdashit, you think the Isser is going to go away, of course the Isser is not going to go away. So what was the point? And then the Gemara basically tried to squeeze a pshat into the Mishnah. Ah, maybe the Mishnah is not talking about a regular carbon, but maybe it's talking about Vlad Kachim, the offspring of a carbon. Where there the Isser of Gid and Usha applies, and you remember it got into a complicated discussion of what came first, the Isser Kachim or the Isser Gid and Usha. We actually went into the discussion of how exactly is the developing fetus inside? Does it first develop the bones and then only afterwards the sinews, etc., etc.? It was complicated. The Gemara says, so what are you telling me that there was no need for it? Didn't we say over there that I was talking about Vlados Kachim? So the Gemara says, you know, even though that was a discussion back there, truth of the matter is, we could just simply say that discussion is not necessary. Now, to be clear, what does that mean, the discussion wasn't necessary? Meaning there's a lot of excellent halachic concepts that we're learning from that discussion, but we didn't need to actually squeeze a pshat into the Mishnah. We could just simply say, my time will kimna, la mishum dekashalan, la lisne meikara. So the only reason why the whole discussion got off the ground is because we were bothered. Why did the Mishnah say it? What was the Mishnah trying to teach us? But now we're here, meaning we're at the end of the Masechta, and now taking a broader view of all these Mishnayos, what we're basically saying is, sometimes the Mishnayos say something, and There's no chiddush. There's not necessarily there to teach us anything that's mechudash. So nami mishum dekashkel on lalit. I'm sorry. Mikara nami lo tikshilach. I did the tana tzorach tana nami shalal tzorach. Meaning after having said what we just got done saying now, and our first sugya here at the end of the masechta, that there's a template to the mishnayos, and the mishnayos just simply have statements that are repeated and repeated and repeated, and often is the case unnecessarily, but unnecessarily meaning that there's no chiddush. But we have a template, so therefore the Mishnah writes it that way. So here too, we could say the same thing. In Perikin Anashim, when the Mishnah says that it applies to Chulin Mukdashin, now what we can say after, you know, in retrospect, is that, okay, the Mishnah said it. Good. The Mishnah have to say it? No, not necessarily. We would have figured it out on our own. Okay, but nevertheless, so the it comes up as just simply part of the template of these Mishnayos. We're on Kufla Mechesim with Beis, we're towards the bottom of the Amud, we're at the two Das, Bechulim, Velom, and Mugdashin, Amaylo. Why is the mitzvah Shiluch HaKein not applying to a carbon? Now, in a moment, the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question, what exactly is the case where the bird is a carbon and there's a mitzvah of Shiluch HaKein? So we're going to be, in a moment, discussing the logistics of the mitzvah. But right now, more conceptually, Bechulim, Velom, and Mugdashin, Amaylo, Damar Kro, Shalech, Shalech, Etzayim. So, Bemisha, Tamitzvah, L'shalcho. So first of all, conceptually, you can't have the mitzvah by birds, because what is the Torah telling us? Send it away. When you have a bird which is hekdesh, or you have anything for that matter with hekdesh, are you supposed to send it away? And the answer, of course, is not. No, you don't send it away. You pick it up and you bring it to the base of Mikdash. So you have over here two competing values. On one hand, the mitzvah Shiluach HaKein that says send it away. On the other hand, that whenever something is kadosh, it means you bring it to the base of Mikdash. Yatzo Zen, the Gemara makes exactly this point. Yatzo Zen, Shiyata Mitzvah Shachal, Lavi Ledei Gizbar. You bring it to the Gizbar because it has Hekdesh. So Amar Avina Hilka Chof Tar Sha'arug is a Nefesh Pata Mishiluach. So the Gemara says, okay, if we are now talking in these terms where you have two competing directions, where one is telling us send it away and the other one is saying, no, bring it here. So if that's true, I'll give you another scenario with that, which has nothing to do with carbon, but still, you're going to have basically, you're going to have two different drives, one going in one direction and the other going in another. For example, let's say I have a bird that was involved in murder, killed a person. Now we know, shor haniskal, that if an ox were to gore a person, so that's shor haniskal, assuming there were witnesses, I'd say warning, but you know, I say that with tongue in cheek. You know, you don't have to warn the animal, but assuming that there were edim, and then you have a beis din, and so the animal is going to be put to death. And it's not limited to just an ox; it would be true by any animal that kills that it is in fact put to death. And the Gemara says, "Of tar sha'arug es nefesh pata mishiluach." So now that I have a kosher bird that was involved in murder, right? It killed an infant, Rachman al-Slan. And so as I was walking in, Stu just told me the story about it just happened in the news recently, that a bird killed an animal. Okay, so a bird killed a person. So anyway, Shaharag is an nefesh pata mishiluch. My taima, I'm a crush. Shalech v'shalech etzayim. B'misha ta mitzuv l'shalcho. Yatzu zesh, yata mitzuv l'shalcho. Ela lahavio l'beizdin. So here, where there is a bird that is now needs to be taken to court, to be put on trial for the murder of a human, so here now we have competing directions. On one hand, it's nesting on top of its chicks, and we have a mitzvah of shiluach, of sending it away. On the other hand, well, we have to bring it to court. We have to try it in court. So the Gemara says, wait one second. Let's be a little bit more specific over here. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, well, wait a second. Are we, after there was already a court case, and it was already convicted of murder? So the Gemara says, so under those circumstances, it's bar ketala, and therefore what? And Rashi over here, really interesting Rashi on the top of the Amud. Rashi writes bar ketala hu umehechan nimlat. And where exactly is this bird running away to? Meaning, from Rashi, the question of the Gemara is just a simple logistic issue of, hey, this bird's not going anywhere, right? In other words, it's in court, it's already been convicted, and we're gonna take it out and kill it in just a moment. And back to the Gemara. Ela delo gamar dine. So the Gemara says, okay, so we are right at the point where it committed the crime, it committed the murder, but we haven't taken it to court yet. So the Gemara says, uvaila asu lebeidina. Vikiyume beu viata rami kerbecha. Okay. So, and at this point in time now, we have an obligation to bring it to the Beis Din because we have this requirement of bi'arta hara mikirbecha. When you have somebody who's involved in murder, for that matter, any serious crime. So we have to expunge, we have to remove the evil amongst us. So this animal over here that murdered, so on one hand, if it's nesting over its young, you have a mitzvah of shiluach. On the other hand, what is the other consideration, the counter consideration, is that we have to bring it to court. The bringing it to court, bi'atar amikarbecha, is going to be a stronger consideration than that of shiluach. Adkan. So far what we have on the table right now is this idea that when we have an animal which is a karban, and I say animal right now, we're talking about birds because we're talking about the mitzvah shiluach hakein. So when you have it as a karban and it also happens to be nesting on top of its young, so is there a mitzvah shiluach? So the Gemara says no, because over here we have basically going in two different directions. One, shiluach, send it away. On the other hand, it's a karban. And when I say karban, by the way, it could be kashya bet agabayas, which we're going to be discussing in more detail in just a moment. So and once it's a karban or kashya bet agabayas, so now not send it away, just the opposite. Take it and bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. So that's why the mitzvah of shiluach doesn't apply under those circumstances. Honey,
a side comment. I mean, the fact that you bring a bird to the court is supposed to give good neshamot.
Okay, could be. I will tell you, the Gemara never mentions that, but that doesn't mean you're wrong. So honey mukdash and hechidami. So so when we're talking about animals which are karbanos, or birds which are karbanos, so the Gemara says, can we just be a little bit more specific over here, meaning now we're going to get to the logistics of how could it possibly be? How can you have we're basically going to create a Venn diagram, right? In one circle we have the mitzvah shiluach hakein, and the other circle we have karbanos, and how can there be any kind of overlap? And as you will see, the Gemara is going to paint the argument beautifully. There really is no existing overlap where you can have one overlapping on top of the other. Let's say, for example, so let's say the nest is in your house and you're a makdish the bird. Congratulations. You have a bird which is now a karban. You have no mitzvah of shiluach hakein, as we learned back in the Mishnah. So mimichayv ki karit kan sipor prat lemezuman. So if the bird is in your house, there is no mitzvah shiluach hakein. If it's nesting in your house, we saw that back in the Mishnah. This is the halacha mezuman, meaning if it was prepared, there is no mitzvah. So okay, good. So we have just now proved that if you were makdish a bird in your house, so now you have a karban, but you don't have the mitzvah shiluach hakein. Well, let's go in the other direction. Ela dechaza kein ba'ama va'akdishe. So the Gemara says, okay, I'm walking and I see a nest up in a tree, and I'm not in my house, I'm just outside, I'm in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and I'm like, fantastic, I want to be makdish that nest, I want to be makdish the birds in that nest. So is there mitzvah shiluach hakein? The answer is yes, of course. It's in a mezuman. Is there, wait, one second. Were you makdish those birds? And the answer, of course, is no. Of course, no. Because in order to be makdish anything, so what's the first rule? Ownership. You need to be the owner of the item. Umi kadosh, ishki akdish es beso, kadosh amar rachmana. Ma beso b'rishusav, kol b'rishusav. One of the rules that comes up most often throughout Shas is this idea that in order to be makdish something, it has to first be yours, and then you're transferring over to the Beis HaMikdash. But if it's not yours, then you can't be makdish it. So, where exactly do we have the sweet spot of there exists a mitzvah shiluach hakein, and on top of that, it also belongs to hekdesh. So the Gemara suggests, well, ela da'agbina lefrochim ve'akdishinu ve'hadar hadrinu. So the Gemara says, okay, so why don't we do the following? Why don't we pick up the chicks, be makdish them? In other words, you pick them up for the purposes of kinyan. That's hagba'ah. Now that they're in your possession, you're a makdish them. And then what you do is you put them back down again. Gemara says, okay, so isn't that a case? So the Gemara says, no, it's not. So, hiya, afilu b'chulin namin l'mechayev. That's not going to be a case in which you're going to be mechayev. Did none. We learned in a Mishnah. I know in our Gemara it says ditana. But, right, small correction. Did none. Now it's also banan v'echziran lekan. V'achar kach chazra ha'im aleim patrim l'shaleach. The Mishnah will tell us that if I take the offspring and then I return the offspring, but I wasn't mafkir them again, so v'acharka chazra ha'im, and then the mother bird returns, so there's no longer a mitzvah of shiluach. Meaning once there was a kinyan on the birds, so then there's no longer a halacha of shiluach ha'kein. It is now considered, falls under the category of mezuman. Meaning it's now prepared, it's now owned. And so therefore there's no longer a mitzvah. right? Mistake that many people make. I made it. Okay, so not the best to admit this, but in other words, these are the kinds of mistakes where I'm not super embarrassed. But many make the mistake that when they find a nest, so it's an exciting opportunity where, okay, let's do the mitzvah shiloh hakein. And so what people do is they send away the mother bird, they pick up the egg, they put it back down again, and we just learn together, that's it. In other words, you fulfill the mitzvah, but you have now lost the opportunity for everybody else to fulfill the mitzvah, because once you pick up the eggs, that is now an act of kinyan, that's an act of ownership, and you put them back down again. Okay, but in other words, they're yours.
What can you be hefker?
Ah, so what you're supposed to do, perfect. So what you're supposed to do, and again, most people don't know this, but most people aren't holding in shiloh hakein. We are now learning the perek. So now we're just a little bit more informed. So what you're supposed to do is supposed to be mafkir, meaning after you pick up the eggs, you put them down again with an act of hefkeris. You have to say, you have to declare, I'm no longer the owner of these eggs. Without doing that, so now you create a halachic problem for the next person who wants to try to do the mitzvah. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara says, in other words, so that doesn't work. So you picked up the eggs or the chicks and you were makdish them and you put them back down again. So now it's clearly been owned. And over here, you can't be mafkir because you were makdish it. So here we have a scenario where there's hektish, but there's no mitzvah. Shiloh hakein. So we struck out again. So Ela da Agbala Eim Vaktishe Vahadra. So the Gemara says, well, here's what happened. I pick up the mother. In other words, previously we suggested picking up the chicks. I pick up the mother, and I was makdish the mother, and I put the mother back down again. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Mikara ichayev lebishiluach mikame daktashe. Wait 1 second. Once you have the mother in your hand, what's the first obligation that now comes up? Before you were makdish it, what happens once it's in your hands? Once it's in your hands, you have a mitzvah daraisa of being mishaleach. You have to send away the mother bird. And so now with the bird in your hand, you now have a mitzvah of shiluach. You have to send it away. And so now you're going to be makdish it. But wait 1 second. Before you're makdish it, you're going to be passing an opportunity and I'll say an obligation to actually send away the mother bird. The Tanya, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Rav Yochanan ben Yosef, Amar hikdish chayav achar kach shachta, patim lachasos. Now this halach is not related to our discussion, but still it's going to make the same point. If let's say you are makdish a chaya. Now, chaya obviously is a wild animal that requires the mitzvah of kisur adam, and obviously it's not being brought as a carbon because carbon is only brought by behema, but still, the point is that if I imbue it with kedusha, and then afterwards you shecht it, patam lachaso, so there's no mitzvah of kisui. However, shecht v'achar kach kedusha, but first you shecht it, and then you are makdish it, so chayav lachaso, so then there's an obligation to do kisui. Now, first of all, strange over here that we're talking about a scenario in which you are after you shecht it. So now it can't stand. So, but nevertheless, though, it is a commodity. It has value, and you're makdish it to the base of mikdash. It's a strange item to be makdish, admittedly. But still, the point is as follows: once there was a kisui adam obligation, because there was. Because the second case of the brises, we're talking about your makdishit after you shechted it. So once there's that kisur adam obligation, that obligation remains. Even though now the animal's in a state of hektesh. Shekvarn is chai b'kisur kodim sheyavol lidei hektesh. Similarly over here. So you picked up the mother birds in your hand. Okay, you're going to be makdishit, right? And now we have the confluence of the mitzvah of shiloh hakein and the mitzvah of being makdishit. The Gemara says, but it doesn't work. Because once you pick it up in your hands, now you have an obligation to send it away. You're going to be makdishit? That doesn't remove the mitzvah of shiloh. So once again, we are basically banging our head. This is now strike four, right? We left the world of baseball. So we're banging our heads trying to figure out what's the case in which a bird is going to be belonging to hektish and therefore exempted from the mitzvah of shiloh hakein. We can, at this point in time, even come up with a scenario in which you can have a confluence of both ideas of both Hektish and the Mitzvah Shiloach. So the Gemara... Good. We're not done yet. wait till we're done, and then... you're right, just thank you. Perfect. Well said. Right, correct? So teeing it up. So the Gemara now is going to give two suggestions, one by Rav and the other by Shmuel. Rav Amar B'maktish Peiro Shochva Umar Dom. So Rav says as follows: one scenario which would be in which you were being makdish the peros shochvo, literally the fruit of the nest. Now, it's a great visualization. Meaning, obviously, we're talking about either the eggs or the chicks. But in other words, if the nest is something which produces, if there was something growing out of it, which obviously that's not the case, but still, just as a visualization, the fruit of the nest is a reference to either the chicks or the eggs. So, b'makdish peros shochvo umardo. And then what happens? Rebellion happens. In other words, and it's an understandable rebellion because it's called nature. Right? The birds then now fly away. If you take a look at Rashi, what exactly happened over here? Rashi writes, b'makdish peros shochvo. So, gozo shochvo l'mizbeach, la'olas adava. So, Rashi over here says that we're talking about where you are makdish these chicks as actual karbanos. Now, keep in mind, by the way, you got to remember all the basic rules regarding birds and karbanos. Only two birds are making it as a karban. So the, and it's only the tur and the benyona. And in just a moment, we can even further identify which one we're talking about of those two, meaning the only two candidates. And we're only going to be talking one of those two. Continuing in Rashi. Gozo shakalim izbechla oos nadava v'achakach kishigidla osan, so peros mardu. And now they grew a little bit, and now rebellion. V'yatza v'kinno b'makam acher. And they go and they nest elsewhere. Now, in the original act of Hektesh, so they were in your possession. They're yours. So now they belong to Hektesh. Right? They are, when I say belong to Hektesh, meaning they're karbanos. Good. But now they left your nest and they went and they parked themselves elsewhere. So, now, if this would have been a chulin bird, so they would have been chayev. Why? I'm sorry. They would have been chayv. Why? Because once they leave your nest, so now it can move from a status of being mezuman to a status of being an eno mezuman. And now they're going to be chayv. Now Rashi continues. As the Gemara is going to be clear, Rav was only talking about kabanos. And specifically we're talking about yonim. Meaning, because remember, this is a mission that we did some time ago in our Masechta, in Chulin. This goes way back. But still, second parak, I think. I hope I'm right. But anyway, this goes way back. Where, when it comes to the Torah, it has to be a mature bird. When it's a benyona, it specifically has to be an immature bird. So over here, if we're talking about little chicks, so we're talking about the yona. Has to be the yona. So therefore, we're talking about a scenario in which you are makdish the yona birds in their very in their young and developing state. Under those circumstances, you were makdish them when they were on your property. They then flew off and went off to somebody else's property. So now we have it, according to Rav. We have a scenario which it is hektish, it's a karban, and on top of that, there also, in theory, would be a mitzvah, shiluch haken, as it went and nested somewhere else. Okay, that's suggestion number one of the Gemara. Possibility number one. Possibility number two, Shmuel, back to the Gemara. Shmuel Amar b'maktish tarna galaso lebed kabayis. Okay? Chicken. Chicken is not a carbon. Chicken cannot be a carbon. Only two birds can be a carbon. So you're maktish a chicken. So that means, of course, that you're maktish a chicken. The kedusha goes directly to bed kabayis. Now, under those circumstances, what just happened over here? Rashi, de kamukim le'afil, I'm sorry. Not yet. So under those circumstances, we're going to have to say the same thing. That the chicken was in your possession, and then what it did is it went away, and it nested somewhere else. And the Torah, under those circumstances, says there's no mitzvah shiloh hakein. Why? Because you have to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. So we basically now have two solutions to our problem. How could there at least be a case in which there'd be a confluence of the mitzvah shiloh hakein and the idea that the bird is a carbon? So we have now Rav's solution, we have Shmuel's solution. They're very similar to one another, but with a notable distinction. Rav was talking about where you were being makdish the bird as a karban. Shmuel was talking about a case where you were makdish a chicken for bedek habayis. Why specifically Rav noted a karban and Shmuel was talking about bedek habayis? The Gemara is going to go over each one. Bishlama Shmuel lo amar karav de kamukim la bekashe bedek habayis. So I understand as far as Shmuel is concerned. So Shmuel's advantage is that he was talking about Kedushas Bedek Abayis, where it's not a karban. Ela Rav, my time alo amar kishmuel, but why is Rav not holding like Shmuel? And by the way, let me make the Gemara's point even better, right, by citing Rashi. Why is it better? Why is it advantageous to talk about Kedushas Bedek Abayis? As Rashi points out over here, because it's a bigger chiddush. Because what level of Kedusha are we talking about? Value Kedusha, not intrinsic Kedusha. And still, the value Kedusha of Kedushas Bedek Abayis is going to override the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein. So you understand where Shmuel now is telling us the bigger chiddush. Why isn't Rav in agreement with Shmuel? So Amlecha Rav, so the Gemara goes on. We're back to the Gemara. We're going to say inside. Dafka kapashu mishloach kigon, perishoch vo dekacha mizbech ninhu. So Rav says like this, that as far as the Kedusha overriding the mitzvah of Shiluach, that's specifically in a case of perishoch vo, where you were being makdish the chicks of the nest, like he described the moments earlier. You see, Rav says, it's very simple. When you have a bird designated as a karban, it is a karban for life until obviously it's brought up on the mizbech. And if it flies away, it doesn't matter. The kedusha doesn't go away. However, in contradistinction to kedushas bedek abayis, and so Rav makes the following argument. It's a fascinating argument. You are makdish your chicken as kedushas bedek habayis. So while the chicken is on your property, so now it belongs to the temple because it has kedushas damim. But let's say the chicken makes a run for it and it leaves your property. And what Rav is arguing is that when that chicken leaves your property, the Kedusha's damim goes away. Now, how mechanically does that work? How does the Kedusha go away? Interesting, Rashi does not comment on this. Tosfos does. Tosfos on the top of the Amud. So Tosfos says, look, it's very simple. Once it leaves your property, it leaves your ownership. It's not yours anymore. Right, birds, once they fly away, so it's as if now, you want to call them hefker, the exact terminology, I may not get right. But the idea is very clear. Once it leaves your property, it's no longer yours. So this animal that was imbued only with Kedushas Damim, so it is belonging to the Beis HaMikdash while it's yours. I know that's a little bit of a brain teaser, because now that it has Kedushas Damim, it's not yours. It belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. But under your auspices, under your... Right, under your sponsorship. Once it leaves your property, it's no longer yours, and so therefore the Kedushas Damim goes away. That's Rav's argument. And what's the counter argument? Well, the Gemara is about to give it to us. And Shmuel says, I fundamentally disagree with that point. Ushmuel Amar kol hecha de Isa bebe Gaza de Rachmana Isa. Once it has Kedushas Damim and it belongs to the temple, it will always belong to the temple. And I don't care, Shmuel says, where it is or where can it be found. If it leaves your premises, if it leaves your property, it still belongs to the Bedek Abayis. Now it's interesting. The Gemara says it's based on the Pasuk Lashem Haaretz Maloah, which indicates that, well, first of all, let me just explain the Gemara Kipshuto, meaning, where's God's dominion in this world? Everything, everywhere. Lashem Haaretz Maloah. Kadosh Baruch Hu has full ownership of everything that is in this world. And that means that the Beis HaMikdash, obviously, which is a representation of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world. So when it has ownership on an item, it doesn't matter where the item is. It could be on your premises, it can go off your premises. It could leave your house, it still belongs to the Bedek Abayis. This is Shmuel's counter-argument, which, by the way, if now I were to think out loud, which I'm doing right now, scary, but if you think out loud, so it comes out now that according to Shmuel, so he might agree with Tosfos' point, where Tosfos says that if you have a bird that doesn't belong to the Beis HaMikdash, and it leaves your premises, so you may lose ownership of that. Meaning he may agree with that point. Only by Bedek HaBayis, where you have this concept of Lashem Haaretz Maloah, would he now argue with Rav and say, under these circumstances, the bird leaving your premises does not mean that it leaves the domain of the Bedek HaBayis. Well, I mean, right, meaning, it's an unusual circumstance now, because somebody who comes across that bird is not going to know. Okay, fine, agreed.
There's no yeish by
I mean, according to Shmuel, I mean, Rav would argue yes, meaning that Rav's position would be exactly what you just described, meaning it's under my auspices, and once I lose control over it, so then it's right, hefker, yeish, whatever the proper terminology is. But according to Shmuel, no. Shmuel would say no. It wherever it is, it belongs to the Beit HaMikdash. And this position of Shmuel is buttressed by Rav Yochanan. Back to the Gemara, halfway down on Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. V'chein amar Rav Yochanan, v'makdish tan glosel l'bedek habayis u'mode. I'm sorry, Umarda, where you were makdish it as bedek habayis, and it rebelled. And nevertheless, wherever it is, it still belongs to bedek habayis. And so therefore, once it still belongs to bedek habayis, there's no mitzvah of shiluach. So Reish Lakish now is arguing, like Rav argued. What do you mean? Once it leaves your auspices, it no longer has Kedusha. And Rav Yochanan's counter-argument to Reish Lakish is Shmuel's argument to Rav. What do you mean? We're talking about Bedek HaBayis. It belongs to the Bedek HaBayis. Where's Bedek HaBayis' range? Anywhere. Everywhere. And so wherever it goes, it belongs to the Bedek HaBayis. Okay. So what do we have right now? We have a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel regarding this idea that when something your makdish in your house, which belongs to Bedek HaBayis, so it stages a rebellion and it successfully leaves your premises, does it also mean that it leaves the kedushas Bedek HaBayis? So let me get the shita straight. So Rav and Reish Lakish would say it does, and Shmuel and Rav Yochanan would say it does not leave the domain of Bedek HaBayis. Now the Gemara says, okay, good. We have the machlokes. We have it down pretty clearly, and now Rami de Rav Yochanan, de Rav Yochanan, Rami de Rabbi Shimon Malakish, de Rabbi Shimon Malakish. Seemingly, the Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish both cross their positions elsewhere. De Itmar. Manazel Bedek HaBayis. So let's say I have some money and I dedicate it. I declare that this is going to now be for Bedek HaBayis. Okay, good. And then, Venignavu Onevdu. And then either it gets stolen or it gets lost. Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan says, okay, you're liable. You're personally liable. So until the Gizbar comes and until the Gizbar takes it from you. Reish Lakish Amar Kolhecha Di Isei BeBeGazad Rachmani Isei. And Reish Lakish says, what do you mean? Do you know the wherever that money is, it still has the Kedusha. D'Yichsiv, and he quotes the Pasuk of Lashem Ha'aretz Melowa. Now, if you remember well, the two shitas that we saw above, it's the exact opposite of what we just got done saying. Meaning that Reish Lakish over here is taking on the role of Rav Yochanan and vice versa. And that's what's called a stira. And that's a problem. So kashya de Reish Lakish to Reish Lakish, kashya de Rav Yochanan to Rav Yochanan. De Reish Lakish to Reish Lakish lo kashya. So the Gemara is going to resolve both positions.
Why don't you say
evil? You could say that. The Gemara is going to say else, something else. So the Gemara says lo kashya. Ha mekame de shame me Rav Yochanan rabbe. Ha labasa de shame me Rav Yochanan rabbe. So we could say like this. As far as Reish Lakish is concerned, so obviously he learned his Torah from Rav Yochanan. So, and also on top of that, he was also very bright. So he said things which he thought were valid positions. But then as Rav Yochanan went and taught him, so sometimes, this is not an objective rule, but sometimes he conceded. And he said, okay, you're right. I thought one way. Rav Yochanan's teaching me a different way. I see his way. So fine. So as far as now Reish Lakish, now... Well, the Gemara here happens to know. Meaning, when the Gemara is giving this answer, the Gemara is saying that we know that this is after you heard it from Rav Yochanan. Okay, but your question's valid. But over here, the Gemara had a Masora. Ela de Rav Yochanan Nikasha. But as far as Rav Yochanan, it seemingly it's difficult. First, we said that according to Rav Yochanan, once the Kachya Bedek HaBayis leaves your possession, it also leaves Bedek HaBayis. It's gone. And the other position is that Rav Yochanan says, no, Lashem Ha'aretz Meloa. And on top of that, you're going to be Chai Bachri Yusan. You're going to be personally liable. So the Gemara says to Rav Yochanan, to Rav Yochanan, Nami Lokashi, Hadamar Allah, Hadamar Hareza. So the Gemara says, and we're going to get to a classic distinction between how you were makdish this item. Did you say the word Alai? That's personal liability. Did you say the word Zeh? In other words, no recourse. I'm being makdish this, and that means that this has Kedusha, but I myself have no, there's no recourse on me, and I have no personal liability. And so that is the classic distinction that we make throughout Shas, and we're making it over here. The Gemara says, but wait one second, slow down. That now means that according to Reish Lakish, he's arguing on Rav Yochanan. Even in such a circumstance, you can't argue on this. This is basic, fundamental tenets as it relates to saying the word Alai versus saying the word Zeh. So Mechlal de Reish Lakish, Avagav Damar Alai LaMechai V'Atanya. How can Reish Lakish argue on such a distinction? It is such a basic distinction. And on top of that, we have Mishnayos, the Mishnah Megillah. It's Mishnayos throughout Shas. So, Ezu Nedav, Ezu Nedava. Neda Hamar Hare Alai. Ola, I'm sorry, Hare Alai Ola. Nedava Ha Omer Hare Zu Ola. Uma be neder nedava, and what's the difference? Neder meso nignava osha avda chai bechriusa. Nedava meso nignava osha avda enu chai bechriusa. And of course, the basic difference is whether or not there's personal liability or there's no personal liability. Once I say the word alai, it's on me. It means I'm being makdish this, but anything happens to it, and I am responsible. When I say the word zu, I'm makdish this. Anything happens to it, I'm not responsible. It's really that simple. It's the difference between recourse and no recourse.
When you say zu, is it any kiddushah at the goof?
No. It's good, but they're both kiddushahs, damim. Okay. And am
lechabesh lakish
hani milikache mizbeach de mechusar krava. Ava kache bedekabais alav mechusar krava. Ava gav de amar alai la mechayev. So what the Gemara now tries to argue is that Reish Lakish will say like this. That's true, honey, merely when it comes to kedushas, which kachem is be'ach, where there you have not yet offered it. But when it comes to kachem bedek habayis, where there's no offering of kachem bedek habayis, so even though you say the word alai, you're not going to be chayev. To which the Gemara says, is that true? V'atnan. Ha'amar shur zeh ola, bayit zeh karban, mesa shur nafala bayit zeh no chayev b'chriyusan. If I'm pointing to either an ox or a house. Now, an ox, you can argue, is a carbon. You can't argue that when it comes to a house. A house is only going to be kedushas bedek habayis. And if I say the word zoo, so I'm not going to be liable. So, shur zoo alai ola by zoo alai carbon, mesa shur of nafala bayis chayv l'shalem. So, over here, we're making distinction not only in a carbon, we're making the distinction in kedushas bedek habayis as well. So the Gemara says, "Hani milechad de mesa shor of nafal abayis chayv asham de lesnuhu." So the Gemara says, "Here's what Reish Lakish would argue. Look, when I makdish a house for the bedek abayis, so my house now belongs. Then I said the word alai, which means that I am signing on to recourse. Where in the event that the house is no longer able to provide the value, based in the base of mikdash can come after me. That's going to be the case, even if not even." When the house is there, or even when the house is not there, I'm going to be personally liable. But you see over here, when the item's in existence, so now I no longer have personal liability because the item's in existence. It just happens to be that I can't tell you where it is right now. I understand that's not a small detail. That's an important detail, right? The Gizbar comes over, the CFO of the Beis Hamikdash comes to my house. Okay, Nuke, can I have it? Well, the truth of the matter is it's out there. I just don't know where it is. Okay. So understandably, like, no one's going to be satisfied with that answer. But halachically, at least Reish Lakish wants to make an argument that that's why there's no recourse under those circumstances. And if you think about it, it does make sense. Meaning, this idea of Lashem Haaretz Melo'a, meaning that as long as the item is still in existence, even though I can't tell you where it is right now, because right now it staged a rebellion against me. It ran away from me. Okay, but it's out there. And Lashem Haaretz Melo'a. And now it's, I guess I can ask the question, whose job is it to find it?
Yeah, what is that?
Right, right. I don't know the answer.
Does he have to pay for his responsibility because he was a shomer or no?
I don't, again, good questions. I don't know. But at least in terms of the principal idea of, can Beis Din now, right, go into your assets and take from your assets? The answer is no, because the item is out there. I just can't tell you where it is right now. Okay, Amar Rav Hamanuna. Let's finish up today with the following. A really technical discussion, but we're here. We are now on this on the distinction of being mocked or something using the word alai and being mocked or something using the word zu. And the basic idea is that alai, recourse. Zu, no recourse. Good. That's clear. What is going to be a little bit tricky, which the Gemara now is going to discuss, is what about with an erech? Now, you remember erechin. It's a Masechta. We're going to be discussing it later in Seder Kachim. It's going to be one of the last Masechtas that we do. No, that's not true. Right? No, it's got a lot of Prakim. I take it back. It's not going to be one of the last Masechtas we're going to do. So it's 8 or 9 Prakim. So anyway, and the Parsha of Erchin is going to be found at the end of Sefer Vayikra. Right? Parsha of Bichukosai. So there, by Erchin, if I state that I'm going to give an Erech of somebody, so it's a fixed amount based on only 2 variables, age and gender. And the Torah, by the way, gives a schedule of how much money you're on the hook for when you give somebody's erech. Good. Now, by an erech, if I make an erech donation, and I even use the word ally, there's not going to be recourse. There's no personal liability. Why not? So the Gemara makes the following argument. My time, delo mitmar le below ally. So the Gemara says it's a logistic issue. It's not a big concept. It's just a practical issue. When you say the word erki or erech ploni, so you have to say the word ally just to construct the sentence. Otherwise, the sentence is just simply a nonsense statement. Hechi lema. Lema erki. Let's say I say my value. Okay, my value. Congratulations. Who's giving my value? So you have to say the word ally just to simply construct a sentence. I'm going to be giving my value. So aman lema. Erech ploni. Aman. And if I said so-and-so's erech, that's great. So-and-so's erech. Okay, good. Danny, you're erech. Now what? In other words, I have to say the word ally, otherwise the sentence just simply doesn't make sense. So there's no other way to formulate the sentence. So therefore, the ally under those circumstances does not create the legal consequence of liability versus no liability, because there simply is no other way to do it. So Maskavla Rav Alema, Hareini Be'erki, Hareini Be'erich Ploni. So the Gemara says, come on, let's be creative. You could do it. You could say an erech without having to say the word ally. You could say Hareini. That's one question. V'otanya Rebbe Nasan Amar V'Nasan Es Erkecha B'Yom Ahu Karas Hashem. And on top of that, another question based on the following. When you lease property and you would like to, now in Yovel, if we just wait till Yovel, it's going to go back to its original owner. But if you would like to, if the original owner would like to buy back the property, so what you do is you prorate how many years are left on it based on how much the original payment was, and on the prorated rate, so you're going to be poda, you're going to redeem. Now, v'nasa nesereka chaba yamahu, korosha Hashem, matam alamar, lefisha matzina bagdisha samasa, shemeschalin, ama o shebechulin, nignavu shavdu, ena chayav machriyusan. So when it comes to general chila, when it comes to general redemption on money, so if it's stolen or it's lost, so therefore there's no recourse. Yachol, over here, I might have thought the same thing. Avzek Cain. Same thing should be true over here. That when I am redeeming a property, and by the way, the buyer of this property is not just anybody. The buyer of this property was the Bedek Habayis. And so therefore, and when I say the buyer was Bedek Habayis, meaning somebody was makdish this property. And now, before the Yovel comes, he wants to buy it back. So under those circumstances, let's say he redeems it. So Yachol Avzu Kein Tamalomer V'Nasan Eser Kecha Chulin Ad Sheyavo Lidei Gizbar. That money that I am setting aside as redemptive money for the Hektish property is not going to be invested with Hektish until I actually bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. And so the Gemara says, So the Tamalam Rasan Eserakacha, Chulin Ad Sheyavo Lidei Gizbar. So Ela Itmar Hachi Itmar. So the Gemara says, okay. So now that we're here, so basically, Amar Rav Hamnuna. So we're going to basically revisit Rav Hamnuna's statement and sharpen it. And that is, HaKomod Berech and Afagav Delo Amar Alai, Mechayev Dichsi V'Nasan Eserakacha, Chulin Hem Biadecha Ad Sheyavo Lidei Gizbar. So now we're going to basically sharpen the statement to Rav Hamnuna. When you say Erechin, and even if you don't say the word alai, you're going to be chayev. And the reason why is as follows. Because unlike what we've been discussing up until now, if I have any hektish property on my own property, and I was makdish it, and it doesn't matter, kedushas bedekabayis or kedushas damim, kedushas mizbeach, and I don't say the word alai, and I say the word zu, so there's no recourse. And the reason why there's no recourse is because I didn't say the word ally. Once I say the word ally, so now there's recourse and there's personal liability. But that's all going to be true when it comes to general Kedushas Damim, where it actually has Kedusha even well before it gets to the base of Mikdash. The moment I'm Makdash it, it has now Kedusha. However, when it comes to Erechin, we've just learned now a new rule when it comes to Erechin. New, meaning new to us. We just learned a new rule when it comes to Erechin, and that is the Erech value, even if I set aside the money, the money is not invested with Kedusha until it's brought to the Beis HaMikdash. And so as a result of that, so if the money is lost, or if the money is stolen from me, so I'm now going to be liable. Doesn't it belong to Hektish? And I didn't say the word a lie? No, because when it comes to Erchin, a new rule constructed for Erchin, it doesn't get invested with Kedusha until it actually gets into the hands of the Gizbar. Okay, so Rav Amnuna actually is telling us now a Chumra when it comes to Erchin. Because it doesn't get Kedusha, so therefore you're going to be liable, well, even if I don't say the word Alai, even if I just simply say the word Zu. I'd kind of, that takes us to the end.
What happened to the
questions? Ask me after. We'll pick it up tomorrow, for obviously from this point in time. Opened up the 12th and final parak of the Masechta, spoke about the basic rules of the Mitzvah of Shiluch that came from the Mishnah standpoint. The first discussion of the Gemara was a discussion of, there's a template to six parakim of our Masechta, of the 12 parakim of Chulin. It's a great summary of the entire Masechta. So six parakim of them have a certain template. And many times the Mishnayos, based on this template, are making points that are unnecessary, but we have a standardized template, and therefore that's how it works. And then the lengthy discussion we had in the course of today's daf was the overlap of a carbon bird and at the same time the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein. They don't overlap, and meanwhile the Mishnah says that in the event that they do overlap, so then the mitzvah of carbon is going to trump the mitzvah shiluach. What exactly would be the parameters? We spent a lot of time in today's daf trying to figure out what exactly would be the scenario. Rav and Shmuel end up giving two scenarios. And a big distinction between Rav and Shmuel, which we discussed over the course of today, if I have Kedushas Damim that leaves my property and premises, does it also leave Hektish as well? That turns into a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, which also was a machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and the Gemara goes on to discuss that very issue.